All right, you guys, welcome to this week's episode of the Temple of Hoop podcast. I'm your co-host, Coach Maples, a.k.a. Jay Mapes, here with the homie Kings, as always. This week, we have a special guest from the other side of town. he's a good dude, You know, we've gone back and forth on basketball on the timeline, me and Kings. Jamal Christopher, resident Clippers fan, you know, gatekeeper for Clippers Twitter. Jamal, what's going on with you, bro?
What up, y'all? What up? It's a long time coming, man.
Right. We know we've been trying to set this up for a minute now, man. I'm glad to finally have you on. You know, it's good for us. Lakers are smashing the Suns. Clippers lost to the Knicks. So, you know, this is just a perfect for us to
perfect
gang up
timing,
on.
Right?
We get the gang up on you tonight.
Yeah, man.
I know, right? Perfect you timing, right?
Came on the wrong time.
Nah, but on a serious note, going to these Clippers, let's talk for real. A lot of the you know, crazy 3-point shooting, crazy offensive numbers, defense has gotten better, but it feels like, and I find myself doing this sometimes as well, that last year is just always in people's head regarding these Clippers, and it's affecting how people see them this year. So, Maul, tell us. The Kings, I'm going to let you happen after Maul. Tell us what's different this year, obviously, aside from Lou. Tell us why things are going to be different this year with the Clippers in the playoffs.
Well, at least in, like, my opinion, bro, the thing with the Clippers, the first thing is I don't think much had to be different to begin with. Like, this is just my opinion, but the Clippers were always closer to the goal than their results from the bubble indicated. Feel me? And so for me, it was just the margins, right? So okay. I think a lot of it is – a lot of credit should be given to Ty Lue, but the front office more so than anything. It's a bit of a roster construction thing, right? So, like, you got a – and we need Serge. Serge ain't in it, so – at least at the moment. So that's a big one. But outside of Serge, you got Rondo in there now. You got Nicholas Batum in there now. Just a lot more playoff-friendly guys, a lot more shooting. The Clippers had an elite offense last year, but the shooting is even better this year. I do think you got a better version of Paul George this year. So there's a lot to like about the Clippers this year compared to last year. I still think at the end of the day, it's going to come down to Kawhi and Paul George. They're going to have to come through when it matters. But they're more equipped to go through, like, let's say they have a bad stretch of shooting. They have a lot more to fall back on this year.
Okay. Kings, I know you were big on –
but the things that are different are like the big stuff.
Okay, but I know Kings last year, when the Clippers hype was at the highest – he was talking about how unplayable Lou Williams was going to be all the way in October.
All year.
So I got to give him credit. He was like, Lou Williams won't be playing more than
play. I said that in the summer. Yeah. I
remember that. So,
treat Lou well, and Trez, if you're relying on them, good luck. That's why I told people.
So, Kings, what is your response to what, you know, Jamal just said in regards to, you know, how they changed a little bit and how much they're a bigger threat this year because of improvement on the margins?
Last year I kept it honest. I said their offseason was overrated because they got Paul George, which we know what Paul George does, and they were relying on Trez and Lou Will. But this summer, I did a 180 because I really liked what they did this summer when they got Serge. And replace Trez. I think for them and for their philosophy for defense, I think Serge fits it better. They have a true rim protector at the five, or have multiple in Serge and Zubac. And then also Serge giving them the ability to stretch the floor would make it easier on, you know, Kawhi and PG getting to the rim in the starting lineup. So I like that a lot. Remember, I was one of the people who said if the Lakers got Serge, you know, we'd go back-to-back, no problem. We'd have no resistance. So yeah. I was one of those people when the Clippers got – it was funny because a lot of the Lakers were like, oh, if we get Serge, we're going to be great. And the Clippers got Serge, and it's like, oh, Serge is overrated. Serge is not great. You know, hating. But it's like Serge is a great pickup. So I love that right. move. And then another move I like that a lot of people weren't high on originally, and because Ty Lue didn't play him a lot, people questioned. But I like the Kennard trade. And I like the Kennard trade because I liked his because of his size factor, I felt like he was a Lou Williams who could actually, you know, not be too much of a burden in the playoffs in terms of, like, you won't need to play him. You won't feel forced to overplay him, but he can come in and give a spark while, you know, being passable on defense here and there because he's a bigger body than, like, a Lou Williams is. So I like the Lou Kennard pickup, too, because he's a shooter, but he can do a little bit more than regular shooters. So that was a clear upgrade for me from the Shamet trade. And one of the biggest things, obviously, the trade midseason, because I was saying all year, Lou Williams needs to get traded. You know, that was my, my comment from the summer. I was like, man, Lou Will needs to be traded already. Like how long? Like, his days are – Mike, I was saying on Twitter, like, his days are numbered with the Clippers. I was saying that all year. When they traded him for Rondo, again, I don't understand. I feel like people just hate the Clippers, so anything that they do just gets looked at in the negative light. I was like, bro, how could you say they got worse trading Will Williams? Like, it just didn't make any sense to me. Lou Williams was literally horrible in the playoffs. Like, look at his career. This is not me saying that Lou Williams is not a great player. He's a great player for what he is, one of the best six men to ever play. But every playoffs, for some reason, and Rockets fans can vouch for me, Raptors fans can vouch for this, you know, like, when he gets to the playoffs, something just happens, and like, because he's a small guard, he's old, he starts shooting horribly inefficient, obviously his defense is terrible, it's like, bro, I was like, when they traded Lou Williams, it was almost a addition by subtraction kind of thing, but then they got Rondo back, and I was like, yo, worst comes to worst, this is like, nothing happened. Like, it was a sideways trade. Worst comes to worst, because, like, they couldn't get worse. Because what Rondo does well is what they needed. They needed a tempo point guard who's going to get everything set up, who's going to get Kawhi and PG in their spots, who's going to get easier looks for Zubac, who's going to get easier looks for Ibaka, you know what I mean, who can make the post-entry pass, can make the lob pass, you know what I mean? You know, it's all these type of easy passes that you see, like, guys like Caruso, guys like Dennis struggle with, Rondo can do with ease. It's going to make it easier on their scores like PG, Kawhi, Ibaka, Zubac, so on, and then Marcus Morris as well. So when they got Rondo, I was like, that's literally what they needed to be a better playoff team. So I'm like, at worst, even if you subtract the scoring, at worst, they went sideways. But I wouldn't even – I tell people it's going to be positive because now you're also going to be able to play Mon more. You know what I mean? You're going to be able to see more Mon minutes. You're going to see Rondo minutes to get better offense, half-court offense. Like, I just think they got better. Like, they're a better team than they were last year. And like Jamal said, they should have won. Like, regardless of whether Lou Will and Trey's unplayable, they should have beat the Nuggets. Like, let's be
and that's honest. Facts. Like, that's facts, yeah.
Beat the Nuggets. So let's stop acting. Like, people were talking like the Nuggets swept them for whatever reason. Like, they got swept. Okay. Like, bro, they should have beat the Nuggets, like, theoretically, and they got better. So I just didn't understand people act. But people respect the Clippers. You want to know why? Because when it came down to Lakers potentially playing the Clippers around, what was everybody saying?
I don't want to play the Clippers.
Exactly, right? So what was all that rah-rah for all the year? And it came down to see him in the first round. I was like, what would they say? Oh, that's too early. I don't know about that one.
Yeah, so, I mean.
Everybody got shaky, yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Jamal, like, just around the margins. I see them a little better. It's just, that's just, for me, it's just kind of seeing how Paul and Kawhi went out last year, the last three games. That makes it tough for me going this year, but. I'll say this for Kawhi, I think that's a blip on the screen because he's normally a guy who raises his game in the playoffs. I'll say that. PG,
yeah,
it seems a little bit more like it's a mental thing because I tweeted before, Paul George should be a top seven player in the league. Now, it shouldn't be a question if he's a top seven player in the league, but there's questions about if he's anywhere from like 10 to 15 because of these mental, you know, hurdles that I think it's mental that he goes through in the playoffs. I love the biggest thing I love about the Clippers is Lou, because Doc's response to adversity is, we're going to do what we do, just better. Like, you know, pound, pound, pound. Yep. I think Lou is more of an adjuster to the situation in front of him, which is why I think the Clippers are going to be slightly better in a playoff setting this year. I don't think Lou gets nearly enough credit for the adjustments he made in 2016 against the Warriors when it got heavy, down 3-1. So that's where I think the biggest improvement will come. I think Kawhi will, if his body's right, I'm going to ask you about that in a minute. If his body's right, I think Kawhi is going to be there when it matters. PG, I just got to see it because I've seen too much folding lately. If you look at the numbers don't look all bad from last year. He had a decent playoff run altogether. It's just in those big games and moments, he just didn't get the best version of him. And I think that's kind of what concerns me going forward as far as the Clippers go. So what do you think about that, Jamal?
A lot of that, bro. I agree more than I disagree. You know, the best thing I could say on the Lou Will front is there was a game last year we played versus the Celtics. It was at Staples, close game. It went into overtime, and this was one of the games where I like really thought, I was like, oh, we may not win this, because it was down the stretch. And it was a Lou Will and Montrezl Harrell pick and roll with Paul George and Kawhi watching them. And it ended up in a pocket pass to Trez into a corner three for Pat Bev, and he made it. And so it's like, good win, but the process is bad because you're going to – you. And it was just like so much bad process last year. And so this year, that's why I said, like, at the end of the day, it's going to come down to, like, Paul George and Kawhi. Because the way the roster is constructed now, there's just a lot taking off, and it's so much more onus on Kawhi and Paul George. Like, those are the guys. There's no more Lou Will fading left three in the playoffs. No more trying to go through Trez. Like, it's Paul George, it's Kawhi, make the play, right? Mm-hmm. And that's how it should be.
I agree.
You know, I compare it to, like, the late 90s Lakers, right, where they had all the talent in the world, but they were getting swept in the playoffs. And when you got to 2000, it was, okay, we're going through Kobe, Shaq, you got Glenn Rice there, but instead of Nick Van Exel, you got Ron Harper. And you got Ron Harper, you got Brian Shaw, like just more stable guys that know their role. You know what I mean? Like, you don't need that level of variance in the playoffs where you got an 18-point-per-game guard who doesn't play defense. You got an 18-point-per-game center who's 6'7", doesn't space the floor, nor is a rim protector. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just feel like this year they're just a lot more competent in that regard. I agree on the Paul George front. I think his struggles are, like, exaggerated, but they're there. They are there, and there's nobody else to blame. He's got to come through. And sometimes, you know, in sports, like, I wish it was a more complicated answer than that, but, like, it's going to be 2-2 in the conference semis, in my opinion. It's looking like it's going to be 2-2 in the conference semis versus the Lakers, and Paul George going to have to be there. Kawhi is going to have to be there. Right. You know what I mean? And you mentioned about how Paul George should be a top seven player. That was all the hype around adding Paul George to the Clippers, right? Like, he was coming off a 28-point-per-game, All-NBA first team. Right.
Level here.
Right. So you thought you were getting two guys that were, like, one of them battling for the best in the league, the other guy battling for a top seven, top eight spot. And I thought personally last year, whether it was due to injuries, whether it was due to Doc, the gap between Paul George and Kawhi was just far too great. And so I think this year the gap is a lot closer. And I do like the stuff that I'm seeing out of Paul George this year. It's encouraging. And so, yeah, I mean, I hope he comes through. I hope he comes through when it matters. I personally have no question about Kawhi Leonard. I don't worry about it at all. I thought both of those guys in games 5 and game 6 versus Denver last year, they were really good. They just didn't shut the door.
Right.
And they're going to have an opportunity to do it again this year. And I think both of y'all know, like, you don't really get those opportunities back. You know what I'm saying? So the fact that a lot of us think that the Clippers are going to be right there with a chance to break through again after, like, blowing it in such catastrophic fashion as they did last year, like, that's good. You know what I mean? So you're going to be right there again with a chance to do it. So that's all you can ask for.
That's good. So I respect that. Moving on. So how – I'll say this. I've liked preparing to have you on. I watched the Clippers games the last week. My outside not as, you know, read up on the Clippers as your opinion is. Mm-hmm. Kawhi hasn't looked necessarily great physically. I'm not worried about his numbers. Like, they'll, you know, he's aggressive in some games, really not as aggressive in other games, but just moving and body-wise, he hasn't looked great. Like, I've noticed it really today against the Knicks, he just wasn't moving great. How is he physically, in your opinion, right now, heading into the playoffs in a couple weeks?
I think he's getting there. I think he's getting there.
It was getting better from where it was, what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. And I think the Knicks, the type of defense that they play, the pressure that they apply on the ball, they can make anybody uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I think physically Kawhi looks great. I saw him take go to the rack, and he caught a body somewhat against the Raptors.
Okay.
I just think more than anything, you know, you can't miss 10 or 12 games against the NBA and then just jump right in. Like, these guys are too athletic. They're too long. They're too quick. They're too fast. And it's going to be an adjustment period. You wouldn't like for that adjustment period to be like right before the playoffs. That's not the best sign in the world, but, physically he's there. I just think he's kind of like easing his way back into NBA basketball after being out for so long. But, you know, with Kawhi, you just can never really be too sure when it comes to his health, right? Because, like, he's been battling injuries, I would say, for a good portion of his career at this point. He's had the foot problem this year. And so the encouraging thing I always say about Kawhi is it's not the thigh. It's not the thigh. It's not the knee. It's just really been foot soreness. So
okay,
he looks good. He looks good. I assume his play will catch up with his body at some point.
All right, last Clipper thing. Where is Serge physically, and then how do you ease him back into your rotation when he gets back? Because Zubac's been really good. So how does that work when Serge gets back?
I think Serge will come off the bench when he gets back. I think he should come off the bench when he gets back. The Clippers have become a top 10 defense with Zubac in the lineup. So I can't really imagine a scenario where Serge jumps right in after missing this much time and he jumps right back into the starter role. I don't think that's going to happen, and it shouldn't happen. In terms of where Serge is at physically, your guess is as good as ours, man. I don't anticipate him playing until the second round.
Oh wow.
So today, Ty Lue said he's looking for second unit pairings that pair good with Rondo and Cousins. And The playoffs are like right around the corner. That just doesn't sound like Serge is going to be back anytime soon. We don't know. Nobody knows. It's just lower back tightness every game. So we need him. That was the crown jewel of the offseason. And without him, that changes things. That changes things a little bit.
I think Boogie's Boogie's kind of a poor man's version of what you get from Serge as far as the shooting and the toughness. I thought Boogie gave really good minutes against the Lakers. I was shocked at how good the minutes were. I was like, I haven't seen this.
he's been getting buckets prior to today. His last five, he was averaging 12 and 6. I thought he was pretty solid in the Denver loss versus Jokic. I'm a little bit uneasy when it comes to playing Cuz. To be honest, every defensive possession that he's out there, where we get a rebound and we get a stop, I'm almost saying like it's luck, like, you know. And the Clippers seem to have a ton of confidence in him. Like, they will throw the ball into DeMarcus Cousins and play out of it. It doesn't really matter if it's Kawhi out there, if it's Paul George. Like, a lot of guys, they feed him. And so I'm not as high on Cousins as everybody else is, but for his original role, he would have been great. But I don't like him to be the backup center, but hey, it is what it is. The most important thing though is Ty Lue's malleability. I do trust that Ty Lue will go away from Cousins if it's not working, you know? So I find comfort in that, but yeah, we need to start that.
I saw Kings mention this a few times in history. Ty Lue benched Kevin Love and Kyrie in a playoff game because they were guarding nobody. And they came back.
That's facts, man.
So
that's facts.
Definitely, you're right. So
I mean, like they gave Kennard that contract and he was getting DNPs.
Yeah, so nothing. Lue just Lue's trying to win the game. So, Ball, this is the year they get to the conference finals at least, right? That's what I'm hearing from you. This is the year.
I got them winning.
Put it on wax.
I got him winning it.
Okay. We got you. All right. Moving on to this play-in where, you know, our downtrodden small market Lakers are in right now.
We believe Lakers.
Lakers, you know, obviously ravaged by injuries. I may be kind of nervous with your little – you made good points, though. You don't want guys trying to come back after missing 20 games and going right into playoff basketball, but that's honestly going to be how it is for LeBron James. With just what the time frame is, so we'll see how that goes. But just giving you guys, you know, the play-ins heating up. There's been much argument about whether it's good or not. I lean that it's good. The playoff level basketball I've seen in the last couple of days has been awesome. Like even the game today, earlier, I had my eyes on the Pelicans Hornets game. Those teams both fighting for play-in spots just went down. Even with some guys out, went down the wire. Both teams in playoff atmosphere. It was dope to me. I've seen several games like that over the week, so I think it's good personally. We went over this last week, Kings. Basically, your quick thoughts about the playing situations and who you guys got taking those last, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 spots in each conference. So, Kings, go ahead. I know you've been out for a while. Tell us who you got coming in the 7, 8, 9, 10 spot in the West.
So, in the West, you know, as I watch the Lakers lose this lead to the Suns right now.
For real?
I have the Lakers. Man. I have the Lakers, Warriors, Grizz, and I do think the Suns will make it. I mean, not the Suns, the Spurs will make it. Pelicans mailed it in, so I don't know what the final seeding will be, but those are going to be the four teams for sure. And in the East, I have I do have the Wizards. I do have the Hornets. The Seas look like they're gonna be there because the Heat, I think, are going to solidify themselves and keep winning games. And the Pacers by default because the Bulls are tanking.
Man.
What about that Magic trade now? They just got a lottery.
Good Lord, man.
So they kind of pulled out the heist with that one. So hey, so shout out to the Magic that it's looking up for them because they got some young pieces. But yeah, so that's I think what we see right now is going to be the final playing team going into the playing scenario.
You got what you got, Jamal?
I'm in 100% agreement. I'm a bit surprised that the Celtics are there, but they're going to be there. Celtics, Hornets, Wizards, Pacers. How about the Wizards though, right? Like the Wizards, if you kind of looked at the first half of the season, you wouldn't have thought, but they balling. And in the West, Lakers, Warriors, Grizz, Spurs. I think how it looks right now is how it's going to end up.
Right. My thing with the Wizards is funny because me and Kings actually had them as a 7th seed when the season started. We were kind of shocked that they got out to the start they did, but between COVID and injuries, they were completely wrapped. Didn't they get like a whole couple weeks canceled or a week?
Yeah.
So they had a lot of
their players was cooked.
And we're going to talk about this guy in a minute, but you know, I just got to give credit to Westbrook, man. He has been insane the last few weeks. It's been amazing. And like I said, that's another note for the play-in because without the play-in, you know, they're 5 games behind the, you know, they're – you know, a game out the 8th, we're not necessarily in contention. Although, like a couple weeks ago, they probably mail it in, you know, without the plan. So,
yeah,
I give it to them. I got, you know, Chicago's 2.5 back with some left, but I think Indiana's going to hold over despite all the nonsense that's going on with them. And then in the West, same as y'all. I looked at the Spurs schedule. I don't think the Spurs are going to win another game, honestly, because they're playing a bunch of teams that are fighting for seeding still and are just much better. And, you know, New Orleans is my second favorite team. I'm going to ride with them to get that 10th spot, man. So that's – I'm with y'all except New Orleans getting that 10th spot. So we'll see what happens, man. But kind of segueing, so – Russell Westbrook, man. We just mentioned the Wizards.
Mm-hmm.
About to break Oscar Robertson's triple-double record. Just a polarizing player. Started off rough this year. Still not having the most efficient year, but the impact on the winning, on what the Wizards turn around is kind of undeniable. Because, we had a light discussion about this on Twitter. We talked about where we kind of had the reverse field on Russell Westbrook and kind of just appreciate what he brings to the game. And not so much like that comparison is a thief of joy. I said I think the Steph battles, when Steph kind of made it pretty clear like he was the point guard of this generation, it kind of made everybody look at Westbrook a different kind of way. And we just didn't appreciate what he did bring to the table. So where are you with Westbrook? And then Keith, you can have one after Jamal. Where are you guys with just Westbrook now and kind of where he stands historically in light of him about to break this triple-double record?
My top 10 point guards all time. Oh, my fault, bro.
Go ahead.
But, okay. Russ is in my top 10 all time point guards. I, in the past, have found myself being a little bit too critical of him. Just because he does have moments in the playoffs that make you just flat out scratch your head. The lack of shooting as his career has went on is a real thing. He's probably not even probably. He's up there with some of the worst decision making that you can ever find out of a league guard. When especially
that's fair
in moments of crisis, like it's just like come on.
That's fair. But, that's fair.
Yeah, man. But when you take him for what he is, man, you just can't help but love him, man. He brings it every night. He instills confidence in his teammates. That's why everybody loves playing with him. Mm-hmm. Even through the bad traits that Russell brings, bro, you just know he's gonna be in a foxhole with you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just feel like that's an underrated trait, man. I know a lot of people like to get on him about his career post Kevin Durant, but you can't take his career away, the career that he had with Kevin Durant, right? Like you can't remove that. And in those years, he was phenomenal. Like, he went head up with Chris Paul in the playoffs, and he got the better of Chris Paul, like he did. And no one really ever brings that up. You know, you see Chris Paul, I don't mean to bring Chris Paul in it, but you hear Chris Paul talk about in the light that you don't hear Russell Westbrook spoken about. And it's like, well, why? You know what I mean? Like, why is Chris Paul the third greatest point guard ever? And we look at Russell Westbrook as this triple double chasing, non-winner, when in reality, you know, I've grown to love Russell Westbrook as his career has went on. He's great. I think the world of him. I don't think you can really win a chip with him as being your number one option at all. And if he's your number two, then your number one has to be like a LeBron or a Kevin Durant type of player. But yeah, when you take him for what he is, man, he's a phenomenal talent. I liken him to like what AI was, you know? So, I love Russell Westbrook.
I said that. I was like, I remember the AI, but I recall AI was a little more dependable down the stretch throughout his prime, at least.
Yeah,
so that was kind of what the difference was for me. Kings, your take on Westbrook.
Man, I've said this for, I think almost 5 or more years now. I think people who know me, I've always said this. I said Russell Westbrook, if he had like a better basketball IQ, he'd be the best player in the NBA. I've said this for like 5+ years.
Ugh.
The amount of talent he's had, and this was back when he also had the understanding when his mid-range was good and he was auto from that elbow free throw line extended. I was like, if this guy could just play smart, he would be the best player in basketball. I actually predicted he would average a triple double the year before he did it. This was when KD left, And I saw Westbrook's stat. I was like, yo, Westbrook is like getting like 25, 10, and 8. I'm like, getting over here. I was like, hey, this dude's going to average a triple double. I told my friends this KD leaves and he averaged triple double. I was like, yeah, I saw this coming a long time ago just because the way he plays, it's like he's high motor. He's always on go. Even his defensive lapses is not because he can't play defense. No, because I look at the 2016 series, for example. The game one where he had like 20 in the second half and they beat the Warriors coming back, and he led that victory in that game one win on the road. He played great defense that game. A lot of him is gambling and just low IQ. It's just low IQ. Like, it's just low IQ stuff that stops him from being a good to great defender, and it stops him from being a better decision maker in the clutch or in heated moments when it's a back and forth and it's like you need to get the best shot available. And Russell Westbrook is like the anti-LeBron, where LeBron is always looking to get the best look available, even if people think that, well, LeBron will just take the shot. He's looking to get the best shot available. Russell Westbrook's like, nah, I'm taking the shot. You know what I mean? He's taking the shot. Every single time he's taking the shower, he's taking the drive. So he's like the anti-LeBron, and that's really hurt him because quiet is kept. I think he has one of the best physical tools ever in the game of basketball.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think you find many pushback on that.
In hoop history, I mean, you can't average triple doubles. You can't call that. You call it stat padding or whatever. That's not easy, man. And to do it at his height for that long and in an age where people say, oh, he's going to lose that athleticism after the injuries he's had, because he's had injuries too. It's not like he's been healthy. You know what I'm saying? So, bro, this is a special physically special player. I just wish his mental approach to the game would have matched his physical approach to the game. I think he would have, man, it would have been a different conversation. That's my opinion on Russell Westbrook's career. But I think this is definitely a top 10 all-time point guard, without a doubt. I mean,
I just think his biggest asset was also his biggest liability, that double-edged sword, which was his confidence. Like, he always thinks he's the best player on the floor.
Uh-huh.
And I think that is something great to have, but I think was detrimental. And at some point, but my 180 came from, it was like, you know, we watch these games. How often do we complain about, you know, guys not playing hard, regular season basketball, such a drag. I don't recall myself ever being cheated when I experienced Russell Westbrook playing basketball and I watch him. Like, his effort is always, and I think from a fan perspective, I think you have to appreciate that aspect of it. And I was one of the, like, and I'm a big Curry guy. Gil Kings knows this. You guys see the timeline. So when the Steph comparisons came, I think it kind of became, you know, not cool, but the hip thing was to just, okay, what has Westbrook not done? You know, Durant goes to Curry, wins right away. Westbrook couldn't do it with Durant those years. So obviously, you know, that, you know, came from it. But I think when you separate that and just kind of take him for what he is, like Jamal said, you appreciate literally his greatness. Like, even though I'm not a huge triple-double guy, but – you know, if it was easy, everybody would do it, right?
So that's
kind of why I am with it. It's just, you know, it's not a big thing for me, but if it was that easy, a lot of guys would have, you know, caught up to Robertson by now. So I respect, you know, his, you know, contributions to the sport and what he does night in and night out. That's not easy. He's had a great season to watch. I mentioned what they do in the off season as far as the Wizards go, but I think I'm, for like 2 weeks now, I've been praying, please give me Wizards next in the first round. Please give me Wizards next in the first round. You know, whenever – and KD can say whatever he wants, but you got to understand, Russ is always going to feel a certain type of way when you feel like you had to cut and couldn't win with him as your guy. And you go with Steph, then you leave Steph and go with Kyrie. So I think it's just a natural competitive flow, and I love when Russ goes against – ever since KD's left, when Russ sees him across as opposition – Russ raises his game to a different level. It's always been like that. Whenever he sees KD as a competitor, I bet the respect and love is still there, but there's still a certain part inside that's like, okay, I wasn't good enough to win with you. I'm going to show you tonight. And I would love to see that in a playoff setting. So I'm praying for that Nets Wizards first round. Yeah. I think it's a little more difficult than people would like to admit, especially trying to implement Harden, who's been off cold turkey right in the playoff basketball. So I think that would be definitely, you know, some fun to watch.
Yeah. So I want to add this about Russell Westbrook. My favorite player in the NBA is Paul George. And the one thing that I appreciate about Russell Westbrook is just highlighting one of his bad games. I think like game five in 2019, he went like 11 for 31. And like, I know that's not a good game, but the fact that he will shoot 30 or 40 times, like that's in some ways admirable. I just watched Paul George in the first round versus Dallas a few games where he shot like 9 times, 10 times, 12 times. Like, you are our guy. And like, Russell Westbrook will go out on his shield. And I genuinely do appreciate that because, you know, not every player in the NBA is going to do that, you know? I just wish that he was a better shooter. I think that affects his decision making as well, because sometimes he's a bit reluctant to shoot it, or he might not shoot it as confidently because he's not as confident in his jumper, which I don't know what happened because it used to be a lot better, especially from the mid range. But no, nah, yeah, Russ is a great for sure.
Yes, indeed. I saw Maul real quick, branching off real quick. I know you're a big Chris Paul guy.
Oh man,
I know. I don't want you to go against the guy. And I saw Kings bring up a great point about how what the MVP conversation has made to us. First of all, I think we all agree that because of, you know, different circumstances, out of different cast control, the MVP is going to have to be Jokic this year, right? Or does anybody have a pushback against that? It's kind of
by default, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, it's, yeah, no matter what, like, games missed, you know, the guys who will be in it. But I just think that the Chris
– Look, if we were being fair, the MVP should be Giannis, but
– I just think that Giannis, yeah. – I think Milwaukee may have came out the gate a little bit slow. And Jokic has kind of been at that level all season. But Giannis definitely deserves it. He's second on my list right now, to your point. So he's not, you know, that far behind. I just think Jokic, given – this is Jokic, so – what they're trying to do with Chris Paul, how do you guys feel about this? Because I feel like it's starting to take away. I saw, Cage, you mentioned their whole organization going from James Jones down. Nikias made some good points there. You're kind of at this point with the Chris Paul push, you're kind of discounting, you know, the jump that, you know, Bridges and, you know, Cam Johnson made, Monty Williams as your coach, you know, adding Jay Crowder, and you have a guy who's averaging 26 a game on high efficiency, who's also doing it. So where do you guys with the Chris Paul MVP push? Does that come off kind of weird to you, or what is it with that?
It's funny because, you know, when the media wanted to ignore the Suns in the beginning of the year, you had a bunch of guys say Chris Paul wasn't that good. And I was arguing on behalf of Chris Paul. I was like, yo, you know, you see these leaps from Cam, you see the sleeves from Bridges. You see Devin Booker playing more composed. That's kind of a Chris Paul effect. You know, teaching more discipline, more pace control. Like, even John Rivers was tweeting out on the timeline. He was like, Book's not playing in the up-and-down offense. No, he's playing the playoff style, Chris Paul playoff style, you know, basketball. But it got them wins, and they were winning. So, he did, you know, Chris Paul had that implement on the Suns where, you know, he was changing the way they play, and he was, you know, helping them play winning hoops. So I was like, you guys have to look at it like that, because I have people saying that Chris Paul not even have more impact than Mike Conley. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, whoa, what you are? You know, y'all. I guess y'all don't like the dude, but let's stop lying here. Let's not act like we're not watching the same tape and whatnot. We're not seeing the same changes to certain play style. But then the Suns started overachieving, and when you start overachieving, and all of a sudden you're battling for the number one seed in the NBA, it's like, now the media has to talk about you.
It's overcorrection, though.
So what do? They don't want to say that they were wrong and that the Suns were better than what they expected. So what they do is they're going to pick something that's known by the crowd, known by the masses. They're going to pick a player who has a certain reputation, a player that they like, in from that the media likes, and they're gonna credit that player with overcorrection, like you said, saying that, well, he wasn't here last year. He's a Hall of Fame player. We know he you know what I mean? Remember last year, Maples last year. Did I not tell everyone I think the Thunder were going to be a playoff team?
Yeah, I was before. I remember the Durham.
I said that.
Bro, yes.
Said they were a lottery team. I said, nah, the Thunder are a pretty good roster. They're going to make the playoffs. I said this. Kid you not, I said this.
I remember.
And that's what happened because I believe in Chris Paul. I know what type of player he is. He enhances the guys around you. So if you have guys who are capable of scoring, like the Thunder had Gallinari, they had Shai, they had Dennis, Chris Paul's going to enhance those guys. So logically to me, I knew the Suns were going to be a sneaky great team this year because, like, you have Devin Booker, you have D.A. Ayton, you have two wings. You just signed Crowder. It's like, of course Chris Paul's going to make those guys better if he made the – especially if he made the Thunder better, he's going to make those guys better. So I was like – he's like, of course he's going to do that. But then the media, what they did – is that they took that and they said, well, everything is on Chris Paul. It's all him. They completely, Rich likes to say on time that they completely ignored the work that Bridges put in, that Johnson put in to improve their individual games because they're young. They completely overlooked how Booker's been evolving. They completely overlooked the foundation that Monty put in place. I mean, the Suns just went off a hot streak, you know, at the end, and they didn't make the playoffs because of the play-in rules, but they went on a crazy hot streak. DeAndre Ayton has suspended for 25 games. He also only played 39, so he had injury issues last year. That also affected them from making the playoffs.
They were 17 or 20 and 18 the games he played, so they would have been a 7-8 seed last year.
You feel me? They were over 500, mm-hmm. You know what I mean, games he played. Somebody lied in my mentions trying to say they only won 40% of games with him, so thank you for that.
It was over 500.
So that was a lie. They were above 500. So it's like, you know what I'm saying? These things mattered. But the media is lazy. They like narratives. They like storylines. So now, you know, they're all giving all the credit to CP3. So now we have extremes. You know, we have dudes like my guy Jay calling him Punk God. And then you have other people saying he's the MVP. You know what I mean? It's like where's the balance of, yes, CP3 definitely enhanced these guys. He's definitely been arguably their most important player, but Devin Booker is their best player. Monty Williams is a good coach, and James Jones has done his job drafting well and putting pieces around. Like, that's the reality of the situation. It's a collective thing, and that's what people got to understand.
I know, Ma, you a big Chris Paul guy. So, you know, chime in with some honesty here, man. Where are you with this?
Yeah. So, right. So, like, what King said, I said the same thing. It's on Twitter. Like, 3 months before last year started, I said the Thunder are going to be in the playoffs. Because, I said the only thing with them was health, right? Like, Gallo was coming off a really good year with us. I mean – I knew how good Shea was going to be. Like, it was very easy from, like, preseason, right? And Dennis they had just a lot of good NBA players. And anybody knows that, you know, recipe to be just a solid – everybody knows the recipe to be maybe not an elite team, but a solid NBA team. Just get a bunch of solid NBA players. And that's what they had last year. They had, like, a lot of just – he's good. He's a good basketball player, right? But with Chris Paul, man, look, he's an all-time great. There's no question that he's made the Suns better, for sure. But we don't have to do this with the MVP. I don't think he's close to the MVP. I'm glad King said that Chris Paul isn't the Suns' best player because he's not. And I just think it's interesting, the narrative switch with Chris Paul, his last two seasons and his seasons prior. I remember his last year with Houston, man. Like, they literally sent him to OKC to just, like, fade away, you know? And so credit to Chris Paul. He's changed his diet. He's got healthier. I think he's gonna go another year this year where he just basically didn't miss any time, which is unheard of for Chris Paul. And I think, to be honest, not a knock on the Suns. I think the Suns are really good. Before the season, I had them as a 4 seed. Because a lot of the reasons that King said, they already had a good infrastructure in place. I think Devin Booker for years has been one of the most underrated players in basketball. Aiden is at the very least a very big, productive piece in the middle. Cam Johnson is solid. Mikal Bridges is going to be a $20 million player in my mind at some point. So like they were good. And you add Chris Paul to that, they were going to be a factor, in my opinion. But I do feel like that is why they are where they are, not just because they added an MVP level player in Chris Paul, because I just don't think he is. And I think in the playoffs, it's going to be very matchup dependent for the Suns and Chris Paul. And, you know, if he gets the Jazz in the series and they got Gobert and drop coverage, he'll look great. And if he gets the Lakers or the Clippers in the series, it may not look so great. So
that's a I just said it looks like the Lakers are going to be pigeonholing that seventh spot. And I think that's where the Suns are headed. And that's all bad for him. Like, man, that's going to suck too. Cause people are going to look at it as the discourse is going to be rough. You know, like King said, operation extremes. So they're going to take it as a referendum on his entire season. With whatever happens with the Lakers series, I don't think it goes past five because of the match. They don't have anything for AD, in my opinion. So I hope that doesn't ruin the season that he had. I think that he was excellent this year with the Suns. It's just not MVP level like people were kind of suggesting. So this was good, man. We got to get Ball in here, way overdue. Yeah. We will once I figure out. I'm gonna figure out how to record on Spaces, man. We've got to do something with the Lakers and Clippers. Have a playoff series. Do something live after the game and be able to record it and repost it, man. We'll definitely have to collab on that. But make sure.
Yeah, I think it's happening.
I think this is the year. I think this Utah. I gotta see him go bear in the playoffs, man. Like that's when I gotta see Mitchell come back. Like Mitchell's their guy, and I'm like, I think Gobert's their floor raiser, and Mitchell's their ceiling raiser. So. Agreed. Playoff time is Mitchell's time. That's kind of where I am with Utah. Me and Kings both think Phoenix doesn't have the experience yet from a lot of key guys.
Yeah.
I'll say this. I think y'all dodged the bullet when Murray got hurt. You can give me because I think when Murray I was going to pick Denver to get y'all in the second round if it happened.
I wouldn't have.
So, yeah, man, like, look. The Nuggets are good. Jamal Murray is good. I actually thought that he was going to regress from the bubble. I was like, I don't believe this. but he's had a really fun – I just didn't. Like, you know what I mean? And because, like, before the bubble, he's been a nice, like, 18-5 type of guy. But he had, like, a fine season this year. But I thought, to be honest, the Jeremy Grant loss would hurt them more than it did. Credit to Jokic for being an MVP level player. And MPJ is taking a jump as well. So I like the Nuggets. I like the Nuggets. But they were down 3-1 to the Jazz and then down 3-1 to the Clippers for a reason.
That's fair.
And like, you know, I think a lot of people overlook that. And even if you want to go even further than that, they were like the 2 seed and went to a game 7 with the 7 seed Spurs. Then they went to game 7 with the Blazers. Then what happened last year in the bubble, like they've had success. Don't want to take that away from them. But I would have picked the Clippers and I would have been pretty comfortable with it, to be honest. But, you know, Jamal Murray is definitely a game changer. He definitely is a factor for sure. I don't want to make it sound like he's not. So,
That's what I was telling people. I was like, bro, because I watched the Nuggets, and I told people when Jamal Murray was in crazy last year, I was like, that's because he's a playoff player. He always ups his game in the playoffs. I don't know how, don't know why, but that's what he does so far. But I told people the Nuggets have never ran through anyone in the playoffs. So I don't know where all this noise was that they was somehow going to run through the Clippers, even though they barely won when they shouldn't have won last season. And then all the liabilities that allowed them to make that comeback for the Clippers are gone. The Clippers got better. The Nuggets theoretically got better, right? Theoretically. And I say theoretically because that AG, the AG trade, man, like, I would have been interested to see that full strength because he's not doing a lot on the defensively that people were making him out to be right now. He's not checking wings like that. I think Grant gave wings way tougher time defensively. And, you know, as good as MPJ is, he's still a defensive liability right now. And as long as you have defense, as long as you can't stop anybody, you're always going to be in close games. So the Nuggets were always going to be in close games. I don't think they would have never ran through any team. And I just feel like this year the Clippers are way more equipped to guard him, not just with Zubac, but also with just Ibaka, like having two true seven-footers to body him and to throw at him and to not give him easy, you know, looks, like having to play Trey as a 6'7 guy where he can just easily see the floor, you know. Ibaka is a seasoned player. He's been in multiple playoff runs, deep runs in the West and in the East. So, you know, it just didn't – I just think people just don't – I mean, obviously these people don't like the Clippers, but they let that cloud their judgment and they start speaking emotionally. And I just think that's what it comes when it comes to the Nuggets. But I think a lot of it's just emotional. You know?
I thought the Nuggets, like, yeah. I had them, like, it wasn't even about the Clippers. It was about everybody in the West. I'm going to take it if they tell you.
That's fair.
But I feel that's what y'all saying, though. There's definitely a lot of anti-Clipper venom.
Man.
Ball put that tweet up about the Laker-Clipper record. Woo! I was like, oh, you had time today, huh?
Oh man, because like I wasn't even trying to be on that type of time.
I know.
To, like, you know, but it always comes when you're a Clipper fan, especially in LA. Like a lot of my followers are like from LA, so like if I say anything about Lakers Clippers, it's 17 banners. Paul George side of the backboard. You know. So it's all good. So.
How many times have you seen that GIF this year?
Too many to count, man. Too many to count. Too many to count, bro. But, like, you got to own it, right? Like,
right.
You know what I'm saying? So, it is what it is.
So, Maul, you also do some music stuff, right?
I do, bro. I do. I rap. Been at it for a little bit. Started some years back. Just kind of recently, kind of, like, really started gaining a following in the last few years. And yeah, it's kind of like been my a little bit more than a passion project. And it just kind of took over into a thing where it's like, okay, let's see how far I can take it. So, yeah, it's kind of like my passion, that and basketball. So that's kind of like.
Look out for that debut album from Maul, Clippers Run the City.
Yes, sir.
Clippers Run the City, the debut EP.
Hey, you feel me?
I'm messing with you.
Y'all heard Kawhi? Kawhi got something coming too.
Yeah, with YoungBoy and
I can't wait to hear that. I just want to hear it.
Right.
Hear it.
Yeah.
But make sure you follow Jamal Christopher on Twitter and IG. Check out his music. Dope Hoop Mind. Cool to interact with. Also, always my bro, it's Kings, bro. Myself, JJMables55_MST. Follow and subscribe to Pod. Drop feedback. We appreciate y'all tapping in with us. And we are out of here. Y'all be safe.
Peace, y'all.
Appreciate it.